Welcome to the Pounce Cast. My name is Matt Mendel, being joined by former Milwaukee women's soccer head coach in 1987-88, men's soccer head coach from 1989 through 1995, and Bud Haiti Athletics Hall of Fame inductee in 2007, Coach Brian Tompkins. Coach, thanks a lot for your time. And let's begin from the very beginning. When did and where did your soccer journey begin?
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. My literal soccer journey began in England. I was born in London and grew up in England, played soccer there, played in college, came over to the US for a summer program, a couple of summer programs, and got offered a job here and made Milwaukee my home for 16 years. All that time I was playing soccer, obviously, and played with the Bavarian club, local club, did some coaching there. Mostly playing for the majority of the decade of the 80s, but I did start coaching some of the youth teams at the Bavarian Soccer Club, and it was there that I met Bob Gansler, who turned out to be my mentor, my guru, and he actually invited me to be his assistant coach at Homestead High School before he came to UWM. And I, of course, leapt at that. I mean, to get to work with a legend, you know, of his status was something that I could only have dreamed of. I did coach in schools, and then Bob got the job here at the university, coaching the men's team. And he asked me, he said, I need someone I can trust to coach the women's team. And I was working at a social service agency at that time, working with emotionally disturbed and delinquent kids, and actually running an independent living program for adjudicated teenagers. And so I coached the women part-time. In the morning, we'd have 6 o'clock practices, and we'd have about 80% attendance every day.
Wow.
No, most of the days it was 100%, but I could tell when it had been wings night at judges. And so, but that was before, when the women's program was Division II, and very much just coming out of, it was in its kind of nascent stages, just coming out of being a club sport. So we were Division II. Our first season was canceled because we were involved in an accident in Chicago. We got the bus was coming back from Purdue, and we got rear-ended by a camper, rear-ended into a flatbed truck on the Dan Ryan Expressway, which I can't think of much worse places to be in an accident. So that season was canceled at 1-1-1, and I came back the following year, and we had a winning season, and I think things began to ascend at that point. That was when I guess to my good fortune, Bob Gansler was named as the World Cup coach for the 1990 World Cup, and he was kind enough and generous enough to recommend to Bud Haiti, who was the athletic director at that time, gave me a recommendation to take over for him as the men's coach. I'm quite confident that I wouldn't have got the job without Bob's recommendation. And so that was a big turning point for me. It was a big step up. I was offered the position. My other job offered me a raise and a promotion and to pay for my master's degree and to really provide some incentives for me to stay there. But I had read a story about, I forget the gentleman's name, Emmett something, who was a baseball umpire, black baseball umpire, who was a civil servant, a highly paid civil servant in the US Postal Service. And he had the opportunity to become the first black umpire in baseball or stay in this highly paid position. And he said something that resonated with me. He said, how many of us ever go to our deaths without ever really doing what's in our hearts? And I thought, I've got to take this. I mean, this is like the opportunity of a lifetime. And so I took over here, and Bob was good enough to leave with a losing record the year before I took over. So he kind of turned that around, and I've mentioned that to him more than once. But it was all onward and upward from there.
So for you growing up, was it all about soccer? Was that your big interest?
Yeah, in high school, I played soccer. I was fortunate enough to go to a high school that was very heavily focused on soccer. I also played cricket, ran track, ran cross country. Because in England, in those days, you didn't have a choice. If the teacher told you you were running, you were running. So I had the good fortune, or the ill fortune, of being a good runner. So I did several sports. But yeah, I mean, it's been basically in my DNA since I was a kid.
So from your playing days, what highlights stand out?
Playing days, playing for the Bavarians. Coming over here, I was 22 years old, I think, and this was before the evolution of the Major League Soccer and the high level that soccer's played at in this country now professionally. Amateur soccer was very good, particularly in Milwaukee because of the ethnic clubs, and I played with the Bavarians, and we won several state championships. We won. I think during the time that I was on the team, we won 23 different events, and it was, it's just a good time to be a Bavarian, and great coaches, and that really ignited my desire to kind of coach. Not that it wasn't there before, but having some terrific coaches at the club, really inspired me. And Bob Gansler, of course. His shadow looms large over a lot of Wisconsin coaches.
You're from England. As you mentioned, you came over to the States, to Wisconsin, to Milwaukee. What were your early impressions? What were your first impressions of this city? What do you think of Milwaukee?
I think Milwaukee was going through a little bit of a renaissance in the early 80s. The downtown area was really, there's a lot of renovation. They put the Grand Avenue Mall in there, the Summerfest grounds. I liked the city, and I liked the soccer environment, the ethnic clubs. There was a real sense of it still being somewhat of a foreign game at that point, and to be a foreigner coming into that was kind of exciting. I think subsequent to that, as the 80s moved on, the game kind of elevated, if you will, to the suburbs and became much more of a suburban game than a city game, and I think that has led to the burgeoning kind of club system that you see now, not just in Milwaukee but all around the country. But I've always loved the ethnic feel of this city. I think it's a medium-sized town with big shoulders. I think it's got enough of an attitude to kind of to live with big cities, but there's still enough of a small town kind of vibe here that makes it appealing to me. And that's that when I moved to Connecticut, it was a very different kind of vibe. So, and having the chance to come back, this is where I came back to.
So you first come to Milwaukee, obviously the opportunities start to present themselves, but did you ever envision you would stay here long term?
I think at that age, I really didn't know. I think when you're in your early mid-20s, the world hasn't necessarily presented itself to you yet in terms of what you might become. I think when you get into your 30s and 40s is when you find out who you are and what you're about. And so I was open to everything, basically. And I honestly hadn't envisioned ever being a full-time soccer coach, because the role of being a professional coach in a collegiate environment doesn't exist in the UK or anywhere in the world other than here. So it was I feel very fortunate to have kind of had the opportunity through Bob and through Bud to basically live a dream.
Obviously, from playing to coaching, Did that come naturally for you, the coaching aspect of things?
Well, I was a teacher before. My degree was in education, so I was a teacher in England for a year in the East End of London, which is a baptism of fire, as you can probably imagine. But I've always had the instinct, the intent to teach. So Bob Gansler says, coaching is teaching in short pants. And that's kind of been my way of looking at it too. I like to teach. I like to help young people develop their abilities. I like to help them grow on and off the field. And this is perfect environment for me.
Was it a big adjustment going from the high school game, being at Homestead, being with the club circuit with Bavarians, to all of a sudden now coaching at the collegiate level?
Yeah, you begin to take on a lot more responsibility. Obviously, you've got things like recruiting, you've got things like scheduling, you've got booking hotels and buses. And in those days, the systems weren't as sophisticated as they are now. So we were doing a lot. We're actually lighting the field in those days, and washing the uniforms. But I loved it. It was more responsibility, but it was. You've really felt like you were managing your own program, though, as opposed to just kind of dropping in and coaching a club team. Here, it was. If you wanted to be successful, you had to do the work, and a whole variety of different things contributed to that.
Well, as you mentioned, so you come to Milwaukee, you become the Panther Women's Soccer Head Coach in 1987. On record, the second ever coach in the program's existence, and again, early days from club to Division II. You mentioned, okay, so that 1987 season eventually gets canceled a few matches in. What took place thereafter? So the season gets canceled. At that point, is there concern that the program may be up in limbo, or is there hope that you can start it back up again in 1988?
Well, to the best of my recollection, Daryl Leonard was the athletic director then, and there was never any question of canceling the program. There was only the primary concern was the health and well-being of the athletes, and there were numerous athletes that clearly weren't going to be able to resume playing, soon enough to resume the season. So the decision to cancel was the right one, and then of course there needed to be time for court depositions and that kind of thing, and. It was a difficult time for all of us, really. Most of the young women that were involved in that accident did come back the following year. Not all of them, but most of them came back, and I think were able to leave the program feeling, good about their experience that second year. But it wasn't an easy time for anybody, And I was dealing with. Because in those days, coach had to drive, and I was dealing with a certain amount of, guilt or sort of feeling of responsibility, even though it clearly wasn't, we weren't at fault. But when you got a lot of young women injured, that was a hard time for them and for me.
So what was the mood when you got back on the field in 1988?
Excitement, because if I remember correctly, we did do some things in the spring of that season. So the fall season was canceled, but I believe we started to get together in the spring when people were healing. We had a lot of neck injuries and whiplash kind of things. Nothing that required any surgery or anything like that, but a lot of whiplash type injuries, the muscle back strains, that kind of thing. But as we built through that spring into the next preseason, there was definitely a lot of excitement. We brought in some other players, and I forget what our record was. I think maybe 8-6-1, something.
Ten and seven. Yeah.
So we were really pleased with that.
I was gonna say, you guys won your first. Four out of your first five matches, six out of the first eight. When you look back, okay, so that was your final season coaching Panther women's soccer before you got the promotion to the men's side. How neat is it for you when you look back, when you look at where this program is now, this women's soccer team at Milwaukee every year is competing for a Horizon League championship? How neat is it to see where this program has been and where it is now?
Well, it's nice to think that we were there at the very beginning of that. Clearly, take I have no responsibility for what's going on
sure.
now, but great teams are built on the foundations of people who sacrifice and who perhaps didn't have the kinds of resources, the kinds of coaching, the kinds of professionalism, you know, that surrounds them now. We were very much, I guess, if you were going to use a kind of shopping example, we were kind of like a mom and pop shop, and now they're a supermarket, you know. So, but perhaps even a shopping mall. But they've done tremendously well. I mean, Laura Moynihan, I think, injected a lot of good energy into this program, and then Mike just took the program to a whole different level, and it's never subsided. And it's great to see. I'm always excited to see how well they're doing.
Of course, in 1989, you become the men's soccer head coach with the Panthers. I want to touch, before we talk about the men's soccer position, you've already referenced Bob Gansler and the impact he's had on you. How did he help, I guess, shape your coaching career?
Well, there are different approaches to coaching education. In England, it tends to be more about grit and effort, even though the technical, tactical side is there. But it's perhaps not as cerebral as Bob's approach. Bob's a thinking man's coach and doesn't appeal to everybody, but it really resonated with me because I attached myself to his way of being rational, being calm. He has a saying that I've heard him say numerous times. He says, soccer can't be played in a frenzy. And I don't believe it can be coached in a frenzy either. That's not to say that passion isn't a part of the game, but I've always modeled myself on his approach, which is to be more professorial, I guess, than somebody that's really animated. I've had my moments, but that wouldn't be consistent with who I am as a person to be loud and screaming and all of that. So it was almost like I met a soccer professor who kind of guided me in a way that really suited my personality.
Was that, you know, you look back in those days, okay, obviously replacing Bob Gansler. I mean, he's a legend now when you think soccer coaching. But you think even going from women's soccer, where you're still trying to lay down the foundation, to an established men's soccer program, was there a big difference? Was that almost a night and day change for you?
The demands were higher. You know, we were going from a nascent program to one that's well established and had established itself as a legitimate regional force. They had had their ups and downs, and there's certainly been some ups, you know, during the Pete Knezich era when he was playing here. When I first came in the early 80s, you know, they had some pretty good teams in those days. Bob upgraded the schedule and brought some really good teams in here, and we tried to continue that. But there was definitely a step up in terms of the significance of the schedule, the caliber of opponents from what we had had. Because being a Division II women's team early in its development, we weren't getting big games. You know, we were Division II, so we were getting a lot of D2, D3 opponents. So it wasn't easy to kind of upgrade that schedule, not in the time that I was there, at least. I mean, certainly they've done that since. But But taking over the men's program, it was definitely stepping into the fast lane.
Well, like you said, the first couple of years, 1989 and 1990, you bring home the big Central Soccer Conference Championship. In 1990, you qualify for the NCAA tournament and take on a powerhouse in Indiana. You think back to those early seasons with the men's team. What was key to success?
Talent, attitude. The one of the things that I think always characterized our teams was that they were primarily Midwest guys. And it might be a bit of a stereotype to say Midwest guys are hardworking, blue-collar kinds of, but there's something to that. And, you know, we made it a goal to keep the best players in Wisconsin here, you know, to get, of the top five players in the state, we always wanted to get two to three of them if we could get them here. And we were fairly successful. We also had the reciprocity program with Minnesota, which meant that because there were no Division I men's programs there, we were able to scoop the best players out of Minnesota too, and the Lagos brothers and Tony Sane, and you know, that has continued, or that continued, you know, after I left. But the key to success was talent, but then also just there were no airs and graces about our team. I would say there were blue collar, but not in the sense that they couldn't play. They were very good, but they were determined, and we developed over those couple of seasons, especially when the Lagos brothers were here, we developed a reputation of being a very difficult team to play against. And I don't want to say we won games before they were played, but there was a certain intimidation factor, an intimidation not about the physicality that you were going to face, but again about, well, we had end up having two All-Americans in that team, two national team players. One played in the World Cup and one played in the Pan Am Games. So it's, you know, we had talent, and that talent can smooth over a lot of other things. So.
With that being said, in your time with the men's program from 1989 through 1995, you compile a record of 90, 41, and 11. We've touched on it already, but what are some of the memories? When you think about men's soccer, Panther men's soccer, your time here, what does stand out about your time with the Panthers?
Something that was always really important, especially in those days, and I think it still is important, was we always wanted to beat Marquette, you know, because there was an us and them kind of mentality that we were the blue collar kids, and you know, they were the kind of have it alls, and we were the, you know, have nothing kind of. I mean, which was quite an easy kind of, quite an easy note to strike with our guys, but always beating them, always wanting to be own the city kind of thing. So that was a big one. I think working with some of the guys that came in as second tier guys in terms of reputation, but seeing them leave here as like top tier, all region, kind of all America candidates. So really developing talent. In terms of specific games, I remember we beat Marquette up at Eline Field with I think a couple of minutes to go. Manny Lagos had just come in late for preseason because he had been in Spain, and he came in and dribbled around three guys and bends the ball inside the far post with like almost no time to go, and it was great. And one other time when we beat Marquette, we played down at Valley Field, and Louis Bennett and I, Louis was my assistant, and we had told the guys that we win down there, we win 2-0, I think. And the guys all wanted to celebrate. We wouldn't let them celebrate on the pitch. And they're looking at me and thinking, why not? I said, we don't want Marquette to think that this was anything special for us. This is just another win. So the guys are all, you know, it's got kind of like this fireworks all inside them. So they all get in the vans. We come back to Engelman, and then we said, now you can celebrate. And they went crazy. It was, you know, it's just little things like that. You forget wins and losses. It's relationships that persist, and you know, I see a lot of those guys around still, and they the camaraderie and the fellowship between them is always a great thing for a coach to see.
Before we talk about some of the players, I'm glad you brought up Louis Bennett, because as you mentioned, you brought him on. He was an assistant starting in 1993 before he eventually would take over for you as the men's soccer head coach. He was, of course, in the class of 2025 in the Bud Haiti Athletic Hall of Fame induction class. But when you look at Louis Bennett, could you sense at that time back in 93, 94, 95 that he would become the coach that he'd become?
Definitely. And the reason I say that is because all coaches, all head coaches, kind of go through peaks and valleys. You know, what works one year might not work the next. And so I think if you're alert to that, you recognize I need new energy. I need a different type of input. I need somebody to kind of help me be, you know, what I can be. And Louis and I have been friends for several years prior to me bringing him on. And I knew what he inspired in me, and I knew that his relationship with players is such that he'd be a big hit. And that was one of the best moves I ever made while I was at UWM, was bringing Louis on board, and he took the program and took it to brand new heights that, you know, that we weren't able to reach. So that was a good move.
Putting you on the spot, who are some of the players that come to mind when you think about your time with UWM?
Well, the big names would be Tony Sane, who played in the 2002 World Cup, Manny Lagos, who was a two-time All-American, Gerard Lagos, played in the Under-20 World Cup. But then some of the local guys that didn't necessarily get the credit, but were terrific players. Jim Klopp from Dominican High School was outstanding. Donnie Grimenz from Minnesota, Brian Donahoe from Minnesota, Mark Beeble from Waukesha. I mean, the list goes on and on. And there were a lot of those guys, a lot of those guys that were just great team players who weren't big names, but they were big personalities, and they were great. You know, I think when a coach can create synergy, that's when you know you're doing a good job. And, you know, with those guys, the synergy was fantastic. So Manny Lagos couldn't be Manny Lagos without Jim Klopp, you know, and Jim Klopp couldn't be Jim Klopp without Brian Donahue, you know, and Craig Names and Eddie Miller. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But there was, and even before that, the tradition was passed down from people like Charlie Ernst and Mike Becker and Tim Bisworm and Peter Schweiner, John Schapansky. I mean, if you know Wisconsin soccer, it's just like a hall of fame on its own. So I didn't get to work with all of those guys. We got to work with most of them, but I got to witness them. And this is a special place. It's a special mentality that exists here. You know, just looking around the trophy cabinet to just see the sustained success that this program has, and knowing that it's humble beginnings, it's very humble beginnings, to see where it's at now is tremendous.
Well, following your days at Milwaukee, you went to Yale, became the men's soccer head coach, won an Ivy League championship with that program, head coach from 96 through 2014, then from 2014 through 19, you became the associate athletic director for student athlete services. To sum it all up, when you think about your time at Yale, what stands out?
It was, being English, it was very much the model that I had always aspired to. You know, no scholarships, it's all about the academics, and the athletics is serious, but there's a balance there. You know, it's every student that's there is a student, you know, and every athlete that's there is a student. And I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed you go from a big state school to a small private school. It's a very different kind of lifestyle for the athletes. Is restrictive in some ways, just because you get less time with your students, less time with your athletes. But in terms of relationships, in terms of quality people, you know, I really enjoyed my time there. I particularly enjoyed the latter years, being able to help student athletes with things like, you know, anything that didn't involve their coaches. You know, I was kind of overseeing, so mental health kind of issues, job placement kinds of things. We started affinity groups for our LGBTQ athletes. We started a women's athlete group. We did some things that hadn't been done before, and I think having had experience as a coach, I think I kind of was on a wavelength that I could kind of help them kind of position themselves to get these things started. So it's it's a very different type of environment, but equally enjoyable in different ways.
Now, I do have to ask you, because we're coming off the World Cup here in this country. I know you've attended some in the past. What did you think of the event? And then also, in your opinion, where is the state of soccer right now as far as the American view goes?
Well, I'll answer the second part first. I think soccer is firmly entrenched in American culture now, more as a participation sport. At the club, high school, college level, the professional game in this country has expanded and solidified itself. I'm still not sure it's found a place in the American consciousness yet, and I'm not sure that it ever will. Not to the same degree that English soccer or Spanish soccer has.
Sure.
Because 30 years ago, you couldn't find a soccer game on television. Louis and I used to go down and knock on the door of the bars downtown to see if they'd show an FA Cup final game. And sometimes they would, sometimes they wouldn't. They couldn't find it on their satellites. Now, almost every American kid has a favorite English team. You know, which is thanks to NBC, they broadcast the English games. In fact, it's easier to see every English game in the US than it is in the UK. So there's a real appetite for English soccer that hasn't translated into MLS. And I'm not sure that MLS, in terms of notoriety, is ever going to be able to compete with the English league.
Of course, you're talking about the World Cup too, and your thoughts on the event itself and just where that stands right now.
I think the World Cup was well organized. I think there were some unfortunate aspects to it. I think it was incredibly expensive and prohibitively so. It's the world game and it's for the fans. And from some of the nations that would participate in, to try and get tickets would be, some of those tickets were probably higher than the national the annual income of some of the people that were watching the games. And I think FIFA needs to do something about that. I think the advertising was, with the hydration breaks, was just a smokescreen for an ad break.
Sure.
That was unfortunate, and it didn't take long for fans to start booing those. I think that was a mistake. I think trying to make this event as corporate as it's becoming has become a problem for the president of FIFA, because he is now facing a lot of criticism for wanting to commercialize it even further. I think the interjection or the intervention of the US president in a decision that was, to my mind, was completely out of order, actually worked against the US. And I never thought I'd ever say this, but I think from what I could tell, after that intervention, a lot of people were rooting against the US because they felt that what had happened had been unfair, which is a real shame for the player, for the coach, so that those aspects were great. But it's always great when World Cup comes around. I mean, it's becoming, I think, part of the American consciousness in terms of watch parties, in terms of people trying to go to games, but certainly watching them on TV. I mean, it's the biggest sporting event in the world. I mean, it's bigger than the Olympics. I mean, the Olympics, it's a different audience for sure, but everybody can tell you something about the World Cup. They can't tell you something about the Olympics.
Well, when we began the Pouncecast, I asked you the question, where did your soccer journey begin? As we wrap things up, I have one more question after this, but what does the sport of soccer, what has it meant to you in your lifetime?
It's given me purpose. It's got me out of a pretty poor living situation in the UK. I grew up in a council estate, grew up with my grandmother, and I think soccer and an education have kind of helped me kind of pole vault my way to places that I would never have got to otherwise. I've traveled, I've been all over the world. I'd never flew in an airplane till I was 22. And now I've been to South America, I've been to Central America, I've been to Europe, been all across the US. And travel is the most, I think, is one of the most broadening educational experiences that any person can have. And I feel grateful that primarily through soccer I've been able to do that and experience the world and other people and understand that life is more than just getting through day to day. There are other ways of looking at the world, other ways of experiencing things and cultures, and like I said, I've been very, very fortunate.
Let me wrap it up by asking you what you're up to these days, for those that are wondering.
I've just come back from a spell in England. I was working at West Ham with the women's team for a while, doing some work with semi-pro club. Came back to Milwaukee earlier in the summer, and now I've taken a part-time role as a coach with a youth team at North Shore United, got the under 17 girls Aspire team, and I'm enjoying that. It's great to be out there with and just enjoy it. You know, there's no pressure to win the league, no pressure to recruit, no pressure, and I've really enjoyed it, and I've been trying a few new things, you know, trying to incorporate mindfulness into what I'm doing with coaching the girls team, to work on developing emotional intelligence as part of the playing environment. So it's an old kind of, it's old habits, but with some new twists. So that keeps it interesting for me, and hopefully we'll end up having some fun and some good memories to look back on.
Well, Coach Tompkins, thanks a lot for your time. This was a lot of fun, and all the best to you in the future.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for joining us for the Pouncecast.